The story behind the headlines. Every Sunday evening at this time, the National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with the American Historical Association, presents Caesar Searchinger in his analysis of the news. In this analysis, Mr. Searchinger draws upon research material especially prepared for these programs by eminent historians. And now, here's Caesar Searchinger.
Good evening, everybody. Three American offensive actions have highlighted the news of the week. First, the landing of the Marines on Iwo Island, only 750 miles south of Tokyo. Second, the completion of the recapture of Manila, including Intramuros, the walled city. And finally, the opening of the 9th and 1st Army offensive on the plains in front of Colon. This, of course, is part of an all-out Allied campaign designed, in General Eisenhower's words, to destroy the German forces west of the Rhine. In this new offensive in the West, the Allies have returned to the task they had to break off in December, when Field Marshal von Rundstedt launched his Battle of the Bulge. Today, we have not only recovered the lost ground, but we are far better off in manpower and supplies. Germans say we have 600,000 men in the field. On Friday morning, Eisenhower struck with terrific force across the Ruhr River after an artillery and air bombardment beating anything yet seen on this front. The action has been compared with a landing on the Normandy beaches because it began with an amphibious operation across the swollen and angry Ruhr, carried out in thousands of small plywood boats. Closely following these masses of floating infantry were American engineers bridging the river under fire. A deep bridgehead was quickly established east of the river on a front of over 20 miles. The Ruhr River, really pronounced Ruhr, but not to be confused with the Ruhr, which is east of the Rhine. Well, the Ruhr was an essential part of the Siegfried defenses. The Nazis had deliberately flooded its banks by blowing up some of the regulating dams. Our recent capture of those dams made the present offensive possible. Equally necessary, however, was the action of the Canadian First Army, which secured the Allies' northern flank. Crossing the flooded plain between the Maas and Rhine rivers near their northern bends, they captured the towns of Cleves and Goch, punching a hole in the Siegfried line. Moving southward, they are now threatening the German right flank in front of the Rhine and the Westphalian plain. At the same time, the Germans' left flank is being menaced by the American Third Army on the River Saar. And in the center, our troops are now fanning out on the plain of Cologne, with the great city itself only from 15 to 20 miles away. The towns of Düren, Jülich, and Linnich are in our hands, including the walled and moated citadel and castle of Jülich. This medieval stronghold had withstood long air and artillery bombardment and had to be taken by direct assault. For five centuries, it was the seat of the Dukes of Jülich and Cleves, the house which furnished Henry VIII with his fourth wife, Anne of Cleves. Düren, whose capture we completed today, is an important manufacturing town of 40,000 or more. Now, although Cologne is only 19 miles beyond Düren, it will not be easy to take, for the intervening area abounds in natural and man-made obstacles, forests, hills, towns, and fortifications, especially along the little river Erft. Behind the Erft are the Ville Hills, shielding Cologne and the Rhine. The valley of the Erft, by the way, which we are now approaching, is the place where the rich Cologne patricians and business tycoons have their country estates. It's a lovely and balmy spot, and no doubt there were patrician villas there even when Cologne was an outpost of ancient Rome. We hope, of course, to destroy the German armies on this side of the Rhine. But General Eisenhower's statement does not rule out the necessity of having to force a crossing of the Rhine and meeting the Russian armies in the center of the Reich. This, in fact, must have been contemplated at the Yalta Conference, which promised new and even more powerful blows into the heart of Germany from east, west, north, and south, all timed and coordinated by the general staffs. Just 10 days after the Yalta Declaration, the coordinated blows have begun. The landing on Iwo proved to be one of the toughest jobs we've ever undertaken. It was the toughest job in the history of the U.S. Marine Corps, now 168 years old. It was worse than Guadalcanal, Tarawa, or Kwajalein. The casualties in the first 3 days exceeded those of the whole expedition on Tarawa, namely 5,372. By that time, we had taken only one-third of the island, which is only 5 miles long and 2.5 miles wide at the widest point. It is safe to say that never in this war was so great a sacrifice made for so small an area. Yet that tiny area is essential to us, for on Iwo are situated 2 airfields from which the Japs attacked our great B-29 base on Saipan. What is even more important, it gave them an advance lookout from which to warn Tokyo of the approach of American airplanes to the industrial regions of Japan. You have heard and read many first-hand accounts of this bloody exploit throughout the week. I needn't dwell on the horrors of it, nor on the wonderful heroism of our men. Here are just a few essential facts to remember. Iwo may prove to be the best fortified small island in the world. Nature and human ingenuity combined to make it so. It consists entirely of volcanic sand and stone, honeycombed with crevices and ridges which provide natural protection to the defenders. Also numerous caves from which guns emerge only to fire and disappear. Iwo's only landing beaches are dominated by cliffs and rearing craters. It is between the crater of 500-foot Suribachi and the serrated northern plateau that the Marines had to go ashore against a deadly accurate barrage from hidden batteries. For there was no surprise on Iwo. The Japs knew we were coming, knew exactly where we would land. There was no choice. The difficulties in some ways were far greater than at Salerno or on the beaches of Normandy. For one thing, the island is so small that it is virtually impossible to maneuver ground forces. Therefore, strongly fortified positions had to be taken by frontal assault. There is no kind of natural harbor on Iwo. The beaches rise steeply off the water, and the shoreline is covered with deep, slippery volcanic sand. Wheeled and even tracked vehicles were almost useless in the initial stages. In fact, the wreckage of this material and of our boats piled up on the beaches impeded the advance of the troops. The landing, all by hand, of supplies of water and ammunition sufficient to maintain combat was a major problem. Sometimes it was just touch and go. However, today the Marines have the first airfield and 2/3 of the second. They also hold Mount Suribachi and are digging the Japs out of its caves. Yet no landing we have made has had more thorough preparation. Iwo had been bombed without let up for 72 days. It had been shelled by the Navy for several days on end. It was drenched with 7,000 tons of shells, including the 16 inches from the battleship guns. But its concealed batteries were unreachable by high-trajectory shells. There was, in fact, no really effective softening up. The estimated 20,000 Japs on Iwo were ready for us. They are fanatical fighters defending what they consider their home soil. Over 2,000 of them are already dead. We landed 2 divisions, a force not much superior to the garrison, from 800 ships of all sizes. On the third day, we committed a 3rd division. Geographically, Iwo and the other 2 little volcano islands belong to the same land formation as the Bonin Islands, which are 125 miles further northeast, and the next stepping stone on the ladder up to Japan. Although the Bonins are Japanese today, they were once under British and American administration, though neither Britain nor the United States claimed them officially. They had been discovered in the 16th century, both by the Spaniards and the Japanese, but not occupied. In fact, the Japanese called the islands Munin-to, which means empty of men, and their present name, Bonins, may be a corruption of that. From time to time, however, American whalers used to put in there for water and fresh fruit, for there was a good natural harbor on one of the islands, Shishi, which we have already bombed. And in 1827, a British captain hoisted the British flag, and an American named Nathaniel Savory brought in a little band from Hawaii, including 2 Englishmen, a Dane, and several Hawaiians. Savory was the boss of the settlement, and he may have been there still when Commodore Perry landed in 1853, a year before he opened up Japan to Western trade. I'll tell you more about this when we get to the Bulins, probably our next stop. When Iwo Jima is in our hands, it will be to the Japs as if a German-held Bermuda had been close to us. Their fighters can no longer attack our superfortresses on their way from the Marianas to Japan. Even though Iwo is too small for our heavy bombers, it may become an excellent base for our fighters, which will provide cover for our heavies. Iwo lies 650 miles north of Saipan. However, it would be too much to say that with the capture of Iwo, we have moved that much closer to Japan. The invasion of Japan will require a tremendous accumulation of land forces and equipment, for which a large land base is required. The first concentration of our forces will probably take place on Luzon, which is now being liberated by General MacArthur's men. When that concentration is completed, our next great attack may be on Formosa, which is only 250 miles to the north, or on the China coast. Both may require the preliminary reduction of the Ryukyu Islands, which connect Formosa with the home islands of Japan. The raising of a new Chinese army of 500,000 men to cooperate with American landings was recently announced. Now, all that will take time. In the interim, we shall constantly tighten the blockade of Japan. Now that Manila is liberated and Bataan and Corregidor are free, the American Navy will have a new base from which to control the shipping in the South China Sea. And at the same time, thanks to the capture of Iwo, the battering of Japanese industries from the Marianas will become more and more effective. Nor is this all. The first carrier plane attack on Tokyo, which took place on February 16th, is likely to be the forerunner of many more. It was repeated yesterday and today. Standing 300 miles offshore for 2 days, the American Navy destroyed or damaged a total of over 600 Jap planes at a cost of only 49 to us. The fact that the Japanese fleet was unable to interpose itself between us and the homeland is a fair indication of its present condition. Various estimates have been made as to the remaining strength of that Navy. None are wholly reliable. However, the opinion of our commanders that the whole Jap fleet today is hardly equal in strength to one of our five fleets is probably correct. That does not mean that the Japanese war is anywhere near its end. It means only that the Japanese Navy has been defeated and the Japanese Army must be next. In connection with this, it's important to record that on the so-called Forgotten Front in Burma, the British have achieved an important success, the crossing of the Irrawaddy River and the extension of their bridgehead south of Mandalay. They have achieved their success by dint of close cooperation with air forces. Hurricane fighters armed with bombs, machine guns, rockets, and cannon have been doing a regular taxi service at the call of the ground commanders. The original crossing of the river was made by some of the toughest fighters and swimmers in the 39th British Army Corps. I mention the swimmers because the first crossing of the wide and turbulent river had to be made by a party of swimmers who slipped into the Irrawaddy during a noisy diversion down the river that put the Japs off their guard. The capture of Mandalay may not be far off. When it happens, the whole Burma campaign will have entered a new stage. In view of the British commitment in Burma alone, it was hardly necessary for Mr. Churchill to repeat for the third time this week the pledge that Britain would fight Japan with all she has and to the end. Now, just a word about Manila. The 3 weeks' fight for the city ended yesterday. The Japanese trapped in the old walled city were killed. In fact, the remainder of the entire garrison was destroyed. 12,000 dead had been counted till yesterday. The disproportionate Japanese losses in the whole Luzon campaign, according to MacArthur, means that the whole archipelago will soon be clear of the enemy. We shall then be ready for the next chapter, the build-up of land forces against Japan. Good night.
NBC has presented another story behind the headlines with Cesar Searchinger, heard over most of these stations every Sunday evening in cooperation with the American Historical Association. This is the National Broadcasting Company.